Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. We have Pedro Gomez at the baseball winter meetings today. Pedro will jump on board. Jordan is back there, too. Jordan Hamm with Sports 360. He is in on some meetings right now with managers and general managers. It's very cool that we're back at the winter meetings. I really like that a great deal. It's been a lot of fun on the baseball front. Michael Fabiano is with us today, NFL Network Senior Fantasy Analyst. All your fantasy football stuff that we do with Michael Fabiano, that is coming up on the show as well a little bit later on this morning. I guess where I'm at today on some things, I was a little bothered yesterday about the passing of Rashawn Salaam. Rashawn Salaam is the 1994 Heisman Trophy winner. He's only 42. He passed away. They said it's an apparent suicide. So I covered Rashawn Salaam before I came to Phoenix. He was over at a little private school, La Jolla Country Day. Our buddy Lincoln Kennedy at the same time was at Morse High School in San Diego. If we're talking high school football in Arizona, it's around, you know, Chandler and Hamilton and Brophy and all the big boys and Saguaro and all that, right? San Diego, La Jolla Country Day would be like... Eric, give me the smallest school you've done a piece on in like 1A or 2A. What would be...
Here in the Valley or just anywhere?
Anywhere.
Phoenix like, Country Day School?
Yeah, it'd be like Phoenix Country Day. Very good. That's a great example.
Maybe, what, 400 students total, if that?
Tops. So Rashawn Salaam was... he was at La Jolla Country Day. And there are very few people there, but he was just a beast. And obviously, he was going against competition that he could school. I come over here. He goes over to Colorado. He goes to the NFL. Doesn't really work out for him. And then yesterday, I hear that he passes away at 42 years of age in a park in Boulder. That's just one of those that kind of, I don't know. Guys, as you get older, and I'm not saying I'm old, but as you go through life, when you have that person that you saw in high school or that you covered, and they're so young... That was a Heisman Trophy winner that passed away yesterday. So that wasn't good.
And then, the saddest part, Brad, was it was an apparent suicide.
Yeah.
What they're ruling it as.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's just a tough, tough deal. He was big time at Colorado.
I have a cool picture somewhere in my office of Luis Gonzalez next to the World Series trophy and Rashawn Salaam next to the Heisman Trophy at a Fiesta Bowl party back in... Had to have been like early 2002, late 2001.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's
cool. Yeah, it's really cool. He was a really nice guy. Pretty quiet, but really nice.
Yeah. So that shook me up. And I was talking to some of my friends in San Diego about him passing away. That happened. So then I decided, let's get into the sports stuff. Because on the court, on the field, it's starting to turn into basketball season. And yeah, there's a lot going on in college football that we'll get to on the show in a bit. But I sat and watched Arizona State basketball, and we've been sitting here through the rant of Grand Canyon. We have talked Grand Canyon University basketball for better part of 6 years. When I was over at Channel 3, even 7 years, I was paying attention to them and had news directors say, why do you care? Why do you go over there? Why do you do anything on them? They're not big time. Nobody cared. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's part of the reason I got out of the business. Being in local TV, it was like, people care. You just have to make the time to give the story. If I have to go through another day of a soundbite of a coach saying, we have a tough football game this weekend, just forget it. Check me out. So I've been telling stuff around GCU. When we first started this company, I told Eric and the group, we're going to do things around Grand Canyon University. And they grew and they grew, and Russ Pennell gets let go, and Jerry calls me. I'm on a plane in Vegas. Phone rings. Jerry Colangelo. Hey, just want to explain to you what's going on, why Russ is leaving, because I was already on the air with it. I said, Jerry, I got it. You know, I got it. I understand what's happened with Dan, and it makes perfect sense. You know, Dan got screwed by Robert, and we had this little conversation. So I'm sitting there about ready to take off on an airplane. And we've seen what Dan has done over there. A couple times, I think Dan is... In my opinion, I wouldn't say that he would agree with me on this. From my view, I think there's a couple times where he's had opportunity to leave GCU, but he's decided to stay there. And I think it's been good for him. It's been really, really good for him. They play tonight. Eric's going to the game tonight. They play San Diego State. the growth of what's going on over GC, you could see it happening years ago. You could see 5 years ago when the plans for this building were being put together. I remember Bob Machum and the president, Brian Mueller, walking me around the campus saying, this is what we're going to do. And there were people that were ripping on me at the time saying, why are you paying so much attention to that little thing over there? You know, pay attention to ASU basketball. Well, ASU basketball isn't doing anything. And so then they started scheduling teams. It wasn't just Louisville the other night and Rick Pitino. And I thought what Rick said the other night had a lot of, I'm going to take care of Jerry. I'm going to do Jerry a solid. And Jerry's going to do me a solid somewhere down the road. That's just how it works. And I'm going to say things that that are really complimentary of GCU and go way over the top. And he did. It's hard to disagree with what he said when it comes to the environment, other than, is it better than Duke and North Carolina? That was like, wow, okay, that's a little much. But when you go to a game there, and I think what's going to happen off this Louisville thing, like Eric, tonight when you go to the game, I would imagine that you're going to be shooting some stuff around the fans and all that, because it's a total scene. Like it's like a mosh pit. It's nothing that we've seen here in Phoenix.
Oh yeah, but I mean, even before the Louisville game, I've covered some pretty big games over there. I'm sure Louisville was the top of the mountain, the peak, so to speak. But they've played New Mexico State last year. That was a huge game. That was
New Mexico too.
That was the first time they beat New Mexico State, one of their, I guess, their biggest WAC rival, so to speak.
Yep.
And it's always fun because it's a unique atmosphere in a sense that when you see the arena is very nice. It's very small, but it gets very loud in there.
Yeah, and so I think what's going to happen, because there's been a lot of play here locally, the mainstream has finally caught up with what's going on at GCU. I mean, it makes it for the minute 30 package at 6 o'clock.
And it helps them, even though they lost to Louisville, they were very competitive against a top 15 program. I know, like you said, Louisville didn't have a couple of their better players.
Their best player didn't play, but still.
Louisville. I mean, Louisville's bench players are probably better than most of GCU's starters.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, they, so all of that to say that when it comes next week, and I've already written this and I've said this many times, when is Arizona State going to suck it up and play Grand Canyon? Because next Wednesday, when GCU goes to Tucson and plays the U of A, that should be the biggest question that is asked. Well, if U of A can do it, then why can't ASU? This leads me to last night's ASU game. Did you watch any of that last night? Did you see any?
I did. I saw most of it.
Man, I mean, it was, and they said, I was at the UNLV game for a little bit before I went to the GCU game. Everybody with the program was saying, we're small, we're not very good, we're this, we're that. They were so bad last night. And Bobby Hurley's quotes were, I'm going to use some of them later in the show today. They were like, wow, scathing and talking about this is the Jimmy V classic and people that have gone through that have it much worse than our guys and our guys should give better effort. He was comparing people that have sickness, right, to the lack of effort by his team, like really hammering them. And that's one of those deals where you look at and say, there are players that will not want to work through that. That was that harsh of a statement on his part. So I watched some of ASU, and it was just dreadful. Jay Billis sounded like he didn't want to be anywhere as near the second half of that game. They were feeling pretty good. Watched some of the U of A game last night. We have the Final Four here this year, so we're going to do a lot more college basketball in the next few months than what we've done in the past. Even though the teams here haven't given us much to talk about, we will still do it. The Wildcats actually threw a 2-3 zone last night, which I thought was interesting at UCI. I know that Sean Miller's team is beat up, but they had 5 cats in double figures. They shot 53%. They ended up winning the game. So watch some of that. A little bit on the Coyotes. The Coyotes were not competitive against the Blackhawks. Jonathan Toews didn't even play. And then I tried to figure the Suns out once again. Their backcourt was scoring right and left. Alex Len looked pretty good, except he fouled out in 19 minutes. Marquise Crist, once again, starts, plays a few minutes. It's just one of those deals where it's a work in progress. They're home tonight against Indiana. It's nothing special. There are moments where I think they're very enjoyable and fun to watch. But by and large, not so much. It's just, it's the in-between time. And then the Diamondbacks made a pretty good move, I think, last night. They have to have a closer. I don't care if he's 40 years of age. I'm going to talk to Pedro Gomez about that on the other side. We're getting into some football later on in the show with the Cardinals playing the Dolphins this coming weekend. And their chances, of course, we have plenty of content up on our website at sports360az.com. Sports360az.com, Arizona-centric things that we see around the valley on the high school, pro, and college level. Pedro Gomez from the winter meetings on the other side. Sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Brad Sussmat tonight, our football show, Football AZ, on Fox Sports Arizona with 7 airings. And we look forward to that. That is tonight. Now let's go back east. And we had Jordan on yesterday. Jordan Hamm is back there at Sports 360 at the Gaylord National Resort Convention Center in National Harbor, Maryland. Pedro Gomez, our good buddy, Valley resident with ESPN. He joins us live from the MLB winter meetings right there on the floor. Jordan was telling me earlier today that you're like the mayor of the winter meetings. Is this true?
Yeah, I've seen Jordan. I saw him yesterday and I already saw him this morning. And you know how it is, Brad, when you're covering the game for 30 plus years, you get to know a lot of people. And
yep.
So that's all it is. That's all it is.
Yeah. You don't handle like personal autograph cards or things like that. You're not that scale yet. You don't have like an entourage and people there for security and all that.
I think you know me well enough to know that will never happen.
Do I know you well enough to think that Fernando Rodney is going to solve all the closing issues in Arizona?
You know what? Short term, it's not a bad option, because when you look at it's funny you mentioned that, because we were talking today about the Wade Davis likelihood of going to the Cubs and why would that happen. And, you know, Theo Epstein has never put a lot of stock into going long term at that position. He thinks it's a very fragile position. You sign someone for 4 years, after two you may be just, you know, eating a lot of money. It's a very fragile, is a good, that's the term I use, psychologically odd position, because if you lose it, you tend to lose it. So when you look at Theo Epstein's track record in Boston, he had Jonathan Papelbon. There were 6 one-year contracts for Jonathan Papelbon. Mm. Last year, he needed a closer. He goes and gets a guy for just 3 months. He doesn't mind paying higher money for a short term as opposed to paying 3 or 4 years for what could end up being very questionable. You know, the closer's role is almost like a kicker. They're just very fragile jobs and fragile psyches that have those jobs. And so Wade Davis is under contract for just one more year. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect scenario. Fernando Rodney, 1 year, nothing wrong with that, because if things do go sideways, well, if it's June or July, you can always just say, let's try to trade him or let's release him, whatever. Whereas if you tie up big money in the closer spot, you're locked in for a while.
And that
with big question marks should that person start to fail.
Sure, sure. No, I get that. That's a good point. Pedro Gomez with us at the winter meetings right there on the floor in D.C. So today should be Aroldis Chapman Day and should be Kenley Jansen Day, right? Today should be the day?
Well, I don't know. You know, there's a smaller market for both of those guys. I think Mark Melancon getting 4 years has opened up. We had 62. And those are tremendous numbers, and he's a tremendous closer. But I think if you were to look at all three closers, main closers on the free agent market, being, like you said, Chapman, Jansen, and Melancon, if you had to rank them, I think Melancon would probably rank third. So the 462 means that the bar has gone up above that, and now all of a sudden, how many clubs can truly get into that type of market? So you're looking at the Yankees, you're looking at the Dodgers, you're not looking at many more after that. Maybe the Nationals, but you know, they've got a lot of money tied up already, and they're still looking maybe to add Andrew McCutchen. So you know, there's not a lot of options for these guys. I don't know that it'll necessarily happen today or tomorrow. This is these both could be contracts that end up being signed within the next month instead of the next few days.
Well, that's interesting.
And I, you know, having said that, It'll probably happen in an hour.
Yeah, right. That's how it works. Talking with Pedro Gomez at the winter meetings. Well, it's kind of like the Encarnacion deal. It sounds like the ceiling or the floor is just falling out on him. Like there's
both him and Jose Bautista.
Yeah.
And they may have to be looking instead at signing maybe a 1-year deal.
Right.
And waiting a year to see other options open up. Because when you look at Encarnacion, you know, you're looking at a guy that plays first base and DHs. Well, that almost eliminates every National League club right there. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the clubs that could go after a guy like that, a bat like either of those, the Yankees, but they just signed Matt Holliday. The Red Sox, well, they just signed Mitch Moreland. So, you know, one of them may have to end up going back to Toronto. One of them may end up signing at a place like Cleveland, where Mike Napoli is likelihood not going to come back, but it may only be a 1-year deal. So, you know, the fact that Holliday and Mitch Moreland each signed 1-year deals means that those openings for the Yankees and Red Sox will be open again a year from now.
Right.
And they may have just badly played the market and their value.
All right, so let's then focus really good and deep on the Diamondbacks from this standpoint. What is the word around baseball back there at the meetings about the acquisition of the GM and the manager, the addition, I should say, of the GM and the manager, one, and what they're doing here? If Greinke is being pushed out there at all, we'd heard Texas may have had some interest and called them. You know how the meetings go. Those things happen all the time. So let's just start with the front office, the GM and the manager, and then get into the payroll and what you're hearing.
Well, Hazen has a really good reputation, and a lot of people here have applauded that move by the Diamondbacks. There's no doubt about that. And Torey Lovullo, again, somebody who has an incredible reputation, very likable guy, and also being applauded for that move. They think that, you know, this is a good manager. He's going to have to get his feet under him. He's managed a few months when John Farrell was out at the big league level, but his personality should lead him to be somebody who players will trust and who will play for him. So those both are being hailed as very good moves. The counter side to that is that the organization is not in a good position to move forward in the short term. It's going to take some time to stockpile the system, to draft correctly or better, and to, you know, for them to start competing, it may take a little while. But both of the moves, manager and general manager, pretty much resoundingly getting solid thumbs up.
So is this an indictment then of not just Dave Stewart, but Kevin Towers and their eras, that they just didn't get it done? Because we should start seeing KT players rolling through here. And in Stu's case, he just left the cupboard bare. Is this an indictment on those two, Pedro, from your view?
Well, I mean, but to defend them a little bit, you know, they were given orders to shed payroll, let's do some things to try to get more streamlined. So, you know, when ownership is giving you that message and you're the GM, and when you're doing things, all of a sudden, if things do start to go sideways and then the upper levels of ownership are silent, you know, you're the one left out there hanging.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a combination, and I don't think ownership should be absolved of blame for what has occurred over the last 7, 8, 9, 10 years there, because you know, when you talk to people here at a place like the winter meetings, where every baseball front office person is, and one of the first things they say is, boy, what a mess it is in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the owner, the president, they have to be involved in everything, and it's just, you know, sometimes you got to hire baseball people and kind of stay out of the way. Look, Dave Dombrowski, you know, made the trade for Chris Sale, and I'm told he did not have to talk to John Henry before the deal was made.
Hmm.
John Henry, the owner, said, Dave, you go do whatever you think you need to do. So when you're a general manager and you have that kind of freedom to truly make the call yourself, that's where you see more success.
That's good. That's good. Greinke, have they listened on that? Because it's, what, a quarter of their payroll is tied up in him?
Yeah, a quarter to a third.
Yeah.
It's way too much. It's way too much to be tied up into one person. And, you know, it's one of those things where now that Chris Sale is done, you know, there's other trade possibilities out there. I think Greinke is not at the forefront of any discussions. It's kind of like, let's see how things settle out. Mm-hmm. And once the dust settles, then if we truly need to go in that direction, then let's think about a guy like Zach Greinke. That's not a front burner type player here at the winter meetings, is what I'm told.
Okay, Goldschmidt's contract, I know it's got 3 years left, but we all know that it's inadequate and something's got to be done. Have you heard anything on that front now that Hazen is involved?
Not because of Hazen being involved, but it's almost one of those things where you've got to seriously consider, look, if you're a franchise that is not moving forward, much like what the White Sox did with Chris Sale yesterday.
Yep. Yes, yes.
You've got to consider your best asset, mm-hmm. and what you can do to turn your organization around at a quicker rate. No matter how popular a player is, no matter how much better he is than anyone on your roster, these are just things you have to consider. That's not to say that's anything that they're talking about right now, but I would say that if the Diamondbacks are floundering and it's July and maybe a club is looking for a power right-handed bat and you can maybe load up your system, something you have to consider. That's certainly what a few other front office people have told me when the name Goldschmidt came up. And, you know, they've got to start thinking along those lines, because let's say it is this July and let's say the Diamondbacks are not doing well, and let's say that somebody out there is willing to really load up and give you a lot of pieces that could work out for you down the line, you're going to have to listen.
Yep.
And, you know, his value, much like Chris Sale, who has 3 full years under contract, you know, Goldschmidt's value, if it's July, he's going to have 2.5 years that you control those 2.5 years. His value is going to be very high. Whereas if he's entering his final season, his value is not as high. So just something to keep an eye on.
Yes.
For the summer.
No, that's good. That's really good stuff. I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time and insight as always. Safe travels. Thanks.
Okay, Brett. All right.
There's Pedro Gomez right there on the floor at the winter meetings. That's really good. And that's really the Sale contract. Yeah, it's a pitcher every fifth day, but it's comparable. You know, you've got the number sitting right there in front of you. And if you're Goldschmidt and you're looking at what's going on out here, whether we like it or not, the stadium is in flux. The team has been in flux, and it's only coming down the tracks. It's coming at you. You can't just ignore it and say, oh, well, my gosh. And you can't just say ownership's got it screwed up. Okay, you can, because you have to look at it from Goldschmidt's point of view. Ownership has tried, in my opinion. They've meddled, in my opinion. I've said that before. I like where they are right now, but gosh, if they're sitting here this July and they're 20 games out, why would you not consider, as good a player as he is, I like him, as good a person as he is, and there's nothing else to hang your hat on with this team, you say, we're going to move Greinke, we're going to move Goldschmidt, why would you not then retool your system?
But wouldn't you think his value is a lot more right now, being Goldschmidt on the trade market, than it would be when the Diamondbacks are floundering away in last place, and it's clearly evident that maybe they would move him?
I think you can make that argument, sure, but
And it's a controllable salary, which is, I mean,
that's the key thing.
He's so cheap when it comes to baseball terms.
No, it is. But if you're a team next summer, to Pedro's point, our team's going to empty their farm system right now for a bat or a player of Goldschmidt's caliber. They might.
I wouldn't say empty, but I think the Diamondbacks could get a pretty good haul for him.
I agree. I do agree with that. Michael Fabiano is next. All things around the fantasy football front. Right there at the NFL Network, Michael Fabiano on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmann. And now Michael Fabiano, all things fantasy football, because he is the Hall of Famer right there at the NFL Network, NFL.com. Michael Fabiano, where did you have David Johnson ranked at the start of the season, Michael?
He was my number two running back in standard scoring leagues and my number one running back in PPR leagues.
You have
unfortunately, I had Gurley number one in standard scoring, and I will not live that down for a long time.
Well, and I'm giving you a pat on the back. Has he exceeded fantasy expectations? Even though you had him ranked that high, has David Johnson exceeded all fantasy expectations?
Yeah, he's been unreal. His receiving numbers are better than some wide receivers. It's just insane how good he's been. And this is the number one overall pick in fantasy next season. And I texted him because, you know, I know David.
Yep.
I texted him yesterday and I said, hey, man, like, you're the number one pick next year. We talked about this during the preseason. I said, you know, you're going to be a big name in fantasy this season. You're going to be a top five pick, no question about it. And now, listen, you want the face of fantasy football right now? It's David Johnson. He's been that good.
Yeah, and he doesn't know it. That's the cool thing
about
him.
He's such a good dude. He is such a good dude. We will, like, text about movies. Like, he just started binge-watching Star Wars. I'm like, dude, like, let's chat about it. Don't watch the first three before you watch the final three, and then watch The Force Awakens. One and two were terrible. Sith was, like, these are the conversations we have on text. Yeah. Talk about dorky movies. Dude is such a good guy, and I'm so happy for him.
Binge watching Star Wars. That's awesome. All right, let's get in the mailbag here. Let's go Drew Brees or Matt Stafford. Getting a lot of questions on this one.
You ready for this?
Yeah, sure.
I'm going Stafford.
Really?
So Drew Brees, and it has nothing to do with what happened last week. When you look at Drew Brees' numbers on the road, they're not good. He's averaging about 15, 16 points a game. And have you seen Tampa Bay's defense at home lately?
Yeah.
Listen, Russell Wilson put up a stink bomb against them a couple weeks ago in Tampa Bay. That defense is playing at a high level, and Stafford has got a much better matchup this week. So, yeah, believe it or not, Drew Brees is a guy that I don't believe is a must start, especially if you have a quarterback with a good matchup like a Matthew Stafford.
Coleman or West at running back? Get a lot of questions on that one this week.
You know, I'd probably go West, but I think you're chasing points. Either way, it's a tough one because Coleman has clearly become the RB2 in Atlanta behind Devonta Freeman, where as earlier in the season, he was right there, even with him in terms of touches. I'd go West, to be quite honest with you. I don't love either one this week, though.
Terrell Pryor or Dez Bryant?
I don't like the matchup for Pryor. I'm going Dez.
Well, is that because you're biased? Or
Well, I mean, Dez is a better wide receiver. He's in a better offense.
Yeah.
And there's reports that potentially Robert Griffin III could be coming back this week. Listen, the Browns, you know, the Browns offense is a lot of question marks. But I will give TP credit. He's been fantastic, and I'm not telling you bench him, but I'm telling you that Dez Bryant's a better play.
All right, and those are a lot of the mailbags, and I could go on and on. I'd rather just get right to the point here. Things that you're looking at this week in terms of starting and sitting, guys you like, guys you don't like this week. Where are you going with this, Michael Fabiano?
So let me give you a little bit of insight here. Some of the top fantasy quarterbacks in the league have awful matchups. Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Marcus Mariota, Dak Prescott. Yeah, Dak Prescott, Ben Roethlisberger. Don't be afraid if you have a quarterback who you trust, who has a better matchup, to sit some of those guys this week. Mm. Kirk Cousins is a perfect example. He's been very good. And the fact that he had 15 or 16 points on the road last week against Arizona, I mean, that's a good line for a quarterback in Arizona because they've been really good against quarterbacks. So Kirk Cousins is a good start. Russell Wilson, who's had two mediocre games in a row, but I do like him against Green Bay as long as it's not snowing like crazy there. Stafford is a good play. As I just mentioned, Jameis Winston's a nice play this week on Thursday night. Derek Carr is a guy who I think is a low-end QB1. Quarterbacks I'm sitting, Blake Bortles. There's not a lot of big names on the list. Dak is someone that I'm a little bit worried about. Ryan Tannehill is someone I would seriously consider benching. When you look at Ben Roethlisberger's numbers on the road in non-dome games, they're not good. So if you have a Winston or if you have a Carr, then you could potentially be sitting Ben Roethlisberger this week. At the running back position, both of the starting running backs on Thursday night, Ware, Murray, good plays. Jeremy Hill is a good play against Cleveland this week. Thomas Rawls is a good play. If you're looking at a sleeper, potentially Isaiah Crowell against the Bengals as a flex. Running backs to bench, we mentioned Terrence West. I don't love the matchup. Theo Riddick in a standard league is basically unstartable this week because, you know what? The Bears, they've allowed the second fewest receiving yards and the fifth fewest fantasy points of running backs. Rashad Jennings, James Starks, who disappeared last week, T.J. Yeldon, Mark Ingram is a bit of a risk this week against the Buccaneers, and so is Devontae Booker. Wide receivers to play, basically both of the Raiders wideouts. Carr is going to be looking for Cooper and Crabtree, no question about that. I like Julian Edelman, especially in PPR leagues. Same goes for Nuke Hopkins. He was a start last week. He had 11 points. That's as good as you're going to get from Nuke with Brock Osweiler throwing the football. I like Doug Baldwin this week. Jameson Crowder and Deshaun Jackson are good plays. Dontrell Inman's a nice sleeper. Wide receivers to bench. Rishard Matthews has been one of the hottest receivers in the entire league before the bye. The Broncos. That is a brutal matchup, yeah. So beware of him. Beware of Allen Robinson. Kelvin Benjamin has been a massive disappointment. Sammy Watkins is a risk. Randall Cobb is also a risk this week as well. So is Stephon Diggs. The Jaguars' defense, it's not that bad when this team is playing on their home field. Moving on to tight ends, I'm keeping the faith in Greg Olsen because who else do I got to start? And the Chargers have actually not been that great against tight ends. I'm sticking with Antonio Gates. Cameron Brate's a sleeper from last week that I like again this week. I think he can play him as well. Some tight ends to avoid. Pitta had two touchdowns last week. Don't chase the points. Kyle Rudolph's got a bad matchup in Jacksonville. Kobe Fleener, I liked him last week. Don't like him this week. He's not good on the road. Ladarius Green had a huge game last week. I think that's chasing the points as well there. And beware Martellus Bennett.
Really?
Even though Rob Gronkowski has been out, Bennett hasn't done much. And he's playing the Ravens this week. So you're probably going to end up starting him if you're not deep at tight end, and most people aren't, but you don't have to like it.
Appreciate the time and insight as always, Michael. Thanks.
See you, pal.
Michael Fabiano right there at the NFL Network. Always good to catch up with Michael. All things fantasy football gets you ready for the NFL weekend. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. So Larry Fitzgerald was named the Cardinals Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year. And this is not breaking news when it comes to Larry Fitzgerald. It's just another moment that we get busy on our side of the microphones talking about the Miami Dolphins and stopping Cameron Wake and Ryan Tannehill's any good, and, you know, and all that stuff. And that's fine. The facts are, I don't think the Dolphins are as good of a team as the Cardinals. Last week they were horrible. The Cardinals have to fly cross country. I don't think that matters. I think the Cardinals win this game on Sunday. And they come home and they beat the New Orleans Saints the following week. And then it's going to be all about us sitting here saying, can they beat Seattle? And if they beat Seattle and this team wins and this team loses, then the Cardinals could make the playoffs by simply beating the Rams. That's how it's going to lay out. Larry Fitzgerald getting the Cardinals Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year. We've said over and over, it seems like on a daily basis, admire him, enjoy it, all of that stuff. But when you look at how he's comported himself away from the game, like when Larry first got here, as any college kid would be, he was a little bit, I don't know, I wouldn't say standoffish. He was quiet. He was kind of to himself. As he grew in his role here with the Cardinals, I think that he really embraced it. I think there was the stage where he had all these lousy quarterbacks and the game wasn't nearly as much fun. He managed to hang in there, but still doing the right things. It's real easy. This is just a thing in life. Really easy to see somebody when they're on top of the world and how they handle their business. Not so much when things go rough and things get tough, as they do for everybody. Okay, as they do for everybody. Doesn't matter in sports when it's the end of the line for Peyton Manning and he's getting his head kicked in and he's over on the sidelines. That was not fun. Kobe Bryant was the end of his career on the court. He couldn't play. Yeah, he finished with a bang, a big bang, but it was hard just to get out on the floor and do his thing. So when you're watching what Larry is doing, and he's also handling the good stuff, I don't know what it's going to end up being for him at the end. I don't know that. I know that Kurt Warner, as one person said on this show, Kurt Warner said to me on this show, he believes that this is Larry's last year. I have not gotten any indication of that. There hasn't been any indication of that. Doesn't mean that it's not his last year. As Larry has been throughout his career, he's very, very secretive, very about his business, does his thing, answers questions, handles it all the right way, but there is something that is calculated in every move that he makes. The perfect way for Larry Fitzgerald to go out will not be next week against the New Orleans Saints, if in fact that's his final home game. But it is worth talking about because a guy like Kurt Warner indicates that he believes he's done. Like, E, am I reading too much into this? Am I connecting dots? You think I'm losing my mind on this one?
No, I think you're right on target. And it's not that Larry Fitzgerald couldn't keep playing, because he's ultra productive and he still has the body to keep playing. But that may be the reason why he decides not to keep playing.
Should we, I think we need to, and Jared Nielsen would have this, we need to get that Kurt Warner on Larry Fitzgerald. Not today. I'm not going to throw him under the bus today and just trying to find that. But we need to just bring that back. It was from 3 weeks ago. And I don't think a lot has changed in the last 3 weeks.
I'd love to know too, Brad, since Fitz and Kurt are pretty close. I wonder what those conversations have been like when Fitz picks up the phone and texts Kurt like, hey, did you know when it was time? Like, how did you handle it? What advice would you give me? Because I guarantee those two have talked about, you know, do I play another year? Do I not play another year? When do I get out? When's the right time to get out? They definitely have.
They've probably talked about Carson's arm strength.
Of course.
They've had to have done that. And talked about, you know, what they have here right now. If in fact next week against the Saints is his final home game, okay, and if they don't go to the playoffs, you can still look at the quarterback situation of the Cardinals and say they need to address it in the offseason. It's probably time for a total rebuild, total makeover. Contracts can be changed. That's the way. Yeah, I make it sound very flip, but anytime somebody says, well, the contract just makes it prohibitive. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. This is the NFL. They can figure a way out. If a player retires, you know, if Larry does retire, Michael Floyd has shown me nothing to believe that he can be the number one receiver here. J.J. Nelson, outside of a touchdown catch last week, has not shown that he can be a consistent wide receiver. So all of a sudden, everything at that position, John Brown's concussions and his health this year, all of a sudden that position becomes a total glaring weakness.
Yeah, Michael
Cardinals.
Floyd's probably going to get paid. It just probably won't be from the
Cardinals.
Won't
be in Arizona, no. So, you know, go to Cleveland and make Big Jack and knock yourself out, wherever it is he ends up. So then you look over at Carson Palmer. Carson Palmer can sit here and turn around and hand the ball off to a running back for the next couple of years. I think they're putting a lot of miles on David Johnson, but they have to because the way this league works, they're still not mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. So they're still trying to play for something. The minute they are not mathematically eliminated, then his production should drop and Andre Ellington should just become the guy that takes the big hits. That's the business side of it. It just is. The next few weeks are going to be really interesting to me, because if they lose this week at Miami, they're going to come back here with no shot. They may be mathematically eliminated. And then it's going to be, is this the final game for Larry Fitzgerald next week at home against the New Orleans Saints? At some point, somebody's going to get Larry to say, I am leaving, I am retiring, or I am coming back next year. That somebody is going to be his inner circle. And it's not going to be in a media, what we call a scrum session, on a Wednesday or Thursday at the Cardinals facility. It's just not going to be.
No, we'll all read about it in the Players Tribune.
We will read about it in the Players
Tribune.
That's
how he does it.
Yes. Or he'll hand it off to fill in the blank of biggest NFL insight. It'll be an Adam Schefter deal. That's just how it is. So sorry, local TV guy that's been assigned to go get the Larry's going to retire, maybe not story. Not happening. But it certainly is going to be interesting next week. Because next week's probably the week that you would like to get an answer from him. Is this going to be your final home game in your career in Arizona? That is how the question should be phrased and asked. Larry, will this Sunday's game against the New Orleans Saints be your final home game in an Arizona Cardinal uniform? And he can't get out of that because he can't say, well, we're hoping to be in the playoffs. No, you've been eliminated from the playoffs. So he has to say either, I'm not going to talk about that right now. That's fine. You know, I'm just focused on the game this week. I haven't really given that much consideration. Right. Okay, sure. So you haven't thought at all if this is it. Kurt Warner said that this he believes this is your last year. Well, Kurt doesn't know what he's talking about. Kurt always wanted to come back. He can laugh that off. He can get out of that one pretty easy. But next week, so I'm watching this, and I saw the story about him being Man of the Year nominee. Just, you know, obviously enjoy it, but know that this is going to pick up in the next 2 weeks. It just is. Tonight we have the Suns playing Indiana, not interested. We have GCU hosting San Diego State, interested. I think Eric's going to the game on that one. There's some high school stuff I may bump into tonight, just drop into a gym because there's some players I want to see. The Coyotes are off tonight, and there's no college basketball tonight. It's just that time of year, which is fine. That means you can watch Brad Sesmatt's Football AZ. See how good that was? That was... It's on Fox Sports Arizona. Multiple airings. 6 o'clock, 6:30, 10 o'clock, 10:30, 1:30 a.m. Tomorrow morning at 7 a.m., 7:30. Lots of airings over on Fox Sports Arizona. Thanks for being with us.